Father, I just ask your blessing on everyone here and everyone who's from our congregation who's not with us. I just ask you to bless them where they are. And I ask you, Father, for your help right now, and that you would help me and bring life from your word. Use me for that in whatever way you choose. Yeshua's name. Amen. There is a lot in this week's Torah portion. Who all read it? Wow. A huge percentage. That's great. We'll just keep building on it. I just want to highly recommend the five books of Moses to you all. It's got a lot of great content in it, and it relates to and interacts with all the rest of the scriptures, which I also highly recommend. So there's no condemnation in not reading the Torah portion, but there is blessing in reading the Torah portion. So I don't know how long it's been since I've actually encouraged people to read the Torah portion each week, but I just want to suggest to you, it would be a really great thing if all of us read it, and then it would just increase our ability to converse about it, and we'd probably all get more out of it. So that would be a great thing. So anyway, I thought it was interesting, since we were getting together this week, that the I don't know how much I thought of it before, but the sons of Israel actually laid their hands upon the Levites, and then Aaron and his sons offered the Levites as a wave offering. I don't think they actually picked up each Levite and waved them. But so as I was looking at that, I was just thinking about the kingdom of priests that we all are, all who name the name of Yeshua, whether they understand it or are an extension of what God began with Abraham and then through his people Israel. And there's so much here, but who thinks the what's called the church world itself is kind of a messy, confusing place down through history, and maybe even not at the moment? A few of us do. Everyone else thinks it's perfectly balanced and there's no issues, right? Whoever thinks that, raise your hand. Okay, so you all agree with the first thing, but three of you raise your hands. Okay. Lost my place here. So there's this guy, Hobab, who shows up in the Torah portion. Anyone know who he is? Who was he? The brother-in-law of Moses, I assume then the son of Yitro, Jethro, Ruel, whichever name you want to use. So finally, after receiving the law and building the Mishkan and setting it up and everything, after I think something over a year, I can't remember exactly right now, God finally decides to move. They're going to move. And so Hobab is going to, I can't remember if Moses asked him to come with him to begin with. But anyway, he's going to go home. He's going to go home to his family. And then Moses says, why don't you stay with us? You know, we'll treat you well, and there'll be provision for you. And then, you know, the wilderness, and you can be our eyes, he says, which it actually brings up a question I can't entirely answer, because he says things about he would know where to camp and everything, but of course they were supposed to camp wherever the cloud or the pillar of fire stopped. So I don't know exactly how to mesh those two together, but in some way they have to fit. But here's the thing. Hobab was not Jewish. And there were a whole bunch of other people that weren't Jewish that were out there at Sinai that all became part of the covenant. And I think it may be common that everybody, I love the smell of Jane's exhaust in the morning. That's an allusion to something even less savory, but if you don't know it, that's fine. So to me, it would make sense that anybody at some point would just ask, well, what is my place in the body of Messiah at all? I don't even know why I'm here. Where do I fit? I don't feel like I fit. But in the Messianic movement, I don't know if it makes more sense to ask if you belong there, if there's a place for you there or not. Does anyone think it makes more sense to ask that within the Messianic movement than the rest of the body of Messiah? Yeah, I actually don't think so either. But so as I was thinking about Hobab, I thought, well, what is the place of, well, what's the place of a Jew? I mean, that's actually been the question for the better part of the last 2,000 years. What's the purpose of a Jew? Why should there be any? Is there still any place for them at all? And in Hobab's case, Moses actually asks him basically to act like somebody that knows the lay of the land and where to camp, and asks, he says, suggests that he can be their eyes, you know. And eyes are one of the things that's mentioned when Paul talks about the body and the members of the body. So this isn't the main thing I exactly wanted to talk about, but it seems that in many churches, I don't know if I should say regular churches, I don't know if there is such a thing, that there's actually a place for Jewish people. And a lot of those Jewish people feel just fine and comfortable and like there's a function for them in those churches that aren't made up of Jews at all. And on the other hand, I've noticed that there are many, many non-Jews within the Messianic movement that seem to find ways to serve and a reason for being there, and that what it becomes really, I think the way to think about it is, what I see between Moses and his brother-in-law and his brother-in-law and the rest of the people is that there's mutual blessing. And basically that's what Moses says to him. Well, if you stay with us and you function in this way, you know, we'll treat you well there. You know, you'd be like everybody else. It's all equal. Please stay with us. And we're not told a lot about it, but he stays with them. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe what if I asked some of you to like be my eyes, or somebody in the congregation was, hey, stay with us. You can be the eyes, or you can be an ear, or you can be one of the feet or both feet, or, I mean, you get my point? There was a reason for him to stay. And apparently there was a reason for that great multitude that went out to be with Israel. And the funny thing is it was Israel at Sinai God was making a covenant with, but didn't seem to be any issue with everyone that was there entering the covenant with God that day as one people. So I don't know. I mean, people are oftentimes confused about what their purpose is, what they should be doing, where they should go. And sometimes people that hadn't felt that way for a long time just begin to feel that way all of a sudden for a week or two or a year or, you know, a long time or a short time. But I think at the very simplest level, the truth is that there's a vital function for anyone in any fellowship who loves those people and can see any value or meaning in being among them. And unless God specifically calls someone somewhere else. And you know, that goes for whether you're Jewish or whether you're not Jewish. God's ultimate aim was to make one body, and the Messianic movement really at its core and at its best, I'm not talking about all the warts and pimples, is really something that seeks to fulfill God's plan of redemption for all of mankind and cause there to be truly one body where everyone still has their identity. Nobody has to turn into something else in order to have purpose, meaning, and function. Going on from there, there's so much in this portion. I mean, we also have complaining, a very important Jewish thing, right? And some pretty serious complaining. But I want to see if that's where I want to go first here. Let's see. Recalculating. Yeah, it's usually I have some of them in each pocket and some in my briefcase and some at home. How many of I'll tell you a mystery. Anyone know that the wind can change what page you're on? All right. Well, who knows that in the beginning was the Word? And does anyone know where the Word was? The Word, let's see, what was the Word?
With God.
Where was the Word?
With God.
And what else?
It was God.
Word was God.
With God.
It was with God.
And
it became flesh and dwelt among us. And, you know, it's a really interesting subject. I've heard, It's not a truly explainable thing, the incarnation. People, my life's half over already. That was said a long time ago to let me know when I was at the middle. What did I just say before that? Oh, yeah, the incarnation. So, you know, I know someone, a young lady from far, far away that once said that once Jesus was like human, and but now he's not. And I said, well, where did you get that idea? Did you ever read about the ascension? He went up bodily into heaven, and the angels told him that this Yeshua that they saw go up would return in like fashion. I said, he ascended with a body. He was incarnated with a body. He died with a body. His body rose. His body ascended. Whether the body changes at all or not, that's not what I'm talking about. As Paul says, basically about what will happen with us. Well, we don't know just what we shall be, but we shall all be changed. And that change will be to be like Yeshua. So what I'm saying is that he ascended bodily, he'll come back bodily, and the ultimate end of creation isn't that everyone become disembodied spirits. Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, but he also says what he really wants is a resurrection. Be present in the body and present with the Lord at the same time. Yeshua in the body will have bodies, whatever they may be like. But So he became flesh, but he didn't. It wasn't like what would I use for an example? I like sardines. They come in a can, right? Inside the can is sardines, but the can isn't sardines. But what Yeshua wasn't was a wrapper that looked like one thing with something else on the inside. His body, his humanity, wasn't just a container for God to walk around in. It wasn't a puppet with God's hand stuck inside of it that he animated to do what he wanted. He became human without not being God. And he was both completely, they're totally integrated. Just like you all believe you have a spirit, right? And you don't think your spirit is your body, right? But you don't think your spirit is just something totally, I mean, your body has nothing to do with who you are, do you? I mean, we're human because we are all of these things all in one package. It's not like this part, and this part, and you can just take them apart, and they just have a life of their own. This wasn't what I was going to talk about, but it matters. See, what? So, there is a mystery. And one time, Asher Entrader made a comment in a message that I hardly even dare say out loud again myself, but it's a thought that I've had many times. See, there's something about the best aspects of relationship between men and women that has something to do with what God wanted with him and people, the people that become his bride. And I don't know, can you imagine a deer and a dolphin or maybe even some amphibian falling in love and then trying to have a life together? This doesn't work. I mean, the deer can't spend its time in the ocean, and they couldn't have kids because there's no way to work that out, and they couldn't reproduce. But you know, I don't know, could they fall in love with each other? The thing is, the groom and the bride need to correspond to each other. They have to be able to come together. And so the scriptures say that Yeshua took on our nature. He partook of our nature so that we could partake of the divine nature. And I know, see, this is where the mystical part of me would start to kick in, and I always keep a very tight rein on it. But there's something about the incarnation that is what makes the true and deepest meaning of the Song of Solomon become possible, which is the bride and the groom, after all the trouble and everything else and all the things that could keep them apart, even in this case, one being divine and the other being carnal, is changed so that they can actually come together and be one in the proper sense. And I'm not saying we become God, like some people say that. I am not saying that in any way at all. But the wedding can happen. But see, what would be the point in a wedding if the bride and the groom can't actually come together? God made this mystery of the incarnation so that the two could actually become one. And in one sense, we already have that now, but when the perfect comes and the completion of everything is done, we will have it in a much deeper and more complete way. It says in the beginning of the gospel, well, a few verses in John 1, there was a true light which coming into the world enlightens every man. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. And the world did not know him. He came to his own, and those who were his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And if you've been paying any attention to current events, or if you've had your eyes open during your sojourn in this world, you'll notice there's a lack of love. It seems more pronounced now, and some people probably want to magnify it just to make money. It makes good copy for news. Some people are probably trying to report on it. What the world needs is love. And I always remember the Bread song, you know, it's, you know, too much this, too much of that, but too much love I've never known. And that is something that any honest person would say. So I'm trying to find, So the true light came into the world, and the light was also what? The light was the Word. The light is and was the Word that was with God and is God. See, even that, once you try to start explaining it, you're just going to get into heresy if you try too hard. So I prefer to just look closely at the lines of Scripture and say, yes, I believe that. Amen. Right. And theology is important, but it's very easy to exceed what's written. So sometimes I'd rather just leave the thing that the brain struggles with to try to make it look the way we want it to look, and just accept that it is as God says it is, and not try to come up with a theology that explains God well enough that I can finally rest at night, because in my own reasoning I've figured him out well enough. It doesn't actually work, but that's actually what people tried to do. But so the true light came into the world. Do you know what light is? What? Yeah, very complex. I was thinking about this in the Scriptures, you know, and I really do want you all to read the Torah portion, but I want you to read all the Scripture. I want to read way more of it all the time than I do. I'd like you to read way more than you do. But I only want to say way more to the extent that it's an amount that you can actually get read. Because it's just like working out. If you decide, okay, I'm going to read my whole Bible every week now, you'll probably get really discouraged very quickly and quit. But if you said, I'm going to actually read some of my Bible every week, well, that's doable. There are people that have told me, well, I read one verse this month. I go, great. That's great. Read another one this month, maybe two, you know, maybe a chapter. Ask the Lord to help you see how much he wants you to read. I mean, I actually pray about that myself. I'm not always real clear how much I should get read. But so light is the light comes into the world, and the light that enlightens every man came into the world. So what's light? And I was thinking about this also in terms of the Word, which, well, see, Yeshua isn't the Bible. All of God isn't contained in the Bible, but it is his Word. So it's part of God. And if you follow me anyway, it reveals some of the mind of God to us, but you know, it's different every time I read it. And that's like that thing about waving the Levites struck me this year in a way I don't know if it's ever struck me before. So there's a couple of things, you know, like right now I can see you because there's light, right? But can I actually see the light? I see you because of the light, but I don't think I'm seeing the light between you and me. I can tell it's there. But maybe I could think I understand it, but then sometime, you have ever see a rainbow? Well, the rainbow tells you something about light that you can't see at all the rest of the time. And then sometimes, like, there's, if you're in just the right angle, and there's a drop of water hanging on an icicle or clinging to the edge of a blade of grass or something, all this color comes flying out of it, and it's just like dancing. It looks like it's alive, and it's just really beautiful. And a lot of time, if you move just a couple inches, you can't see it anymore. But the same light is still there, but it's just not being refracted. So this is what I was thinking about. Yeshua is the light. There's light. There's a light of the Word. And depending on the angle and the person you are when you wake up on any given day, because we're different every day, we're not thinking exactly the same thing. God's always speaking. Every time we read a passage, it's the same passage. It's unchangeable, but there are things in it that are that we haven't seen before. And so in some way, the Lord just refracts it in the way that he wants and speaks to us in a way that sometimes we know it's speaking to us, but it's, we can't even maybe figure out, well, how is it that I'm getting that out of that line? But yet it makes sense. He's saying something to me from that line. He sometimes speaks to people about something in their life from a line that has absolutely nothing to do with it. Has that ever happened to you? I mean, in the literal sense, it's not talking about that thing. But at any rate, we can't explain light. We don't even know what it's made of. We don't exactly know how it travels. I know it can go through a pane of glass. I'm not sure how it gets there. If it's particles, I don't know if the particles go between what the glass is made out of or what. Or if it makes a little hole and then the hole just closes and I can't see it. I have no idea. We can't even really explain light that's coming from this big burning object up in the sky and illuminating the world. If we can't explain that, then I actually find comfort in God's infinite nature, because every time I feel so small and so limited, I remember that he's got it all in the palm of his hand, and that it doesn't really matter if I can figure all of it out. So sometimes I really wish I could. Maybe not. Well, I mean, my mind's not even big enough to realize what the all is to figure out, but the parts that I wish I knew, you know, it can be really hard to accept not knowing sometimes. And, but we can trust him. And so he has put it together in this way where this thing, this worldwide body of Messiah. My life's over. You know, God chose all of you. Do you know that? He actually chose you. Each one of you, he chose you. And he chose Abraham. And why exactly he chose Abraham on the day when he chose him, I don't know. I just know that he came from a people that worship idols. He spoke to Abraham. And what Abraham did, you ever hear that mustard seed thing? I mean, my mom always talked about the mustard seed. I have a little thing, glass with a little mustard seed inside of it in my office that my mom had years ago. She always talked about that mustard seed thing. And I asked the organic farmer one time how to sow mustard seed. He went like this. He goes, like, I could tell he meant he had some mustard seed in his hand. He goes, and you know, it's not the best way to sow it, but it'll work. There's giant red mustard in my garden that's just there every year because it was once planted, and you can toss it along the edge of a fence, and then one day when you're not thinking about it, you walk along, you go, oh, there's giant red mustard growing there. But Abraham had, like, basically, he had a seed pouch with no seed, and he had a garden with no soil and no water. And he took one little seed. After trying to find another way, because he listened to his wife, which was another bad thing to do. And it made sense, actually, what she was suggesting in human terms. After all that, he just took his one little seed and planted it. And look what grew from it. And the scriptures say that if you have faith as a mustard seed, the mustard seed is like, it's the smallest seed. It grows up, it becomes like a tree, and the birds of the air nest in it. So this is another thing coming back to the Messianic movement in one sense, is that, see, that tree that came from Abraham planting the seed that he had grew up into this huge thing. And birds of every kind from all over the world are nesting in that tree right now. And it's also similar, actually, to what God did with Noah. Noah told him, God told him, build this huge boat. Spend 120 years doing it. And then all these animals are going to come. And, you know, yes, I believe it actually happened, and all those animals actually came, and only eight people. But what you have is a picture of every ethnicity. I'm not comparing people to each different animal. I don't mean it that way. But there's a guy named Clace there who wrote a book called God's Bringing All Sorts of Animals into the Ark. And what he means in the title is God is bringing, like, people of every kind from every place into this thing that he's doing. And part of the point is, and you better start to get with the program and realize that the boat is for everybody that will respond to God. And so the ark, it's about the deliverance of all of humanity. There wouldn't be a humanity if Noah hadn't built the ark. And in one sense, what God did with Abraham is building this another enormous ark, or a tree to nest in, a safe place where those that name the name of God come and become one with everyone else that does, where everyone has a place, everyone has a purpose, nobody's without a function, nobody's without meaning. There isn't anybody that doesn't count. And I dare say that there is no real gathering of believers anywhere on the face of the earth where any other person, believer, or somebody that becomes one, comes into that group, that person could possibly be without a purpose there. It just isn't even possible. So, and I've noticed that more is possible when there's less complaining. And I'm talking about myself. I've noticed that anytime I stop complaining, all of a sudden more becomes possible. Because my complaining is about what there isn't, and what won't be, and what can't be, and what I don't like about the situation, right? But that's not really what God's that concerned about, because he doesn't care about the limitations. He doesn't have any. He doesn't care what I think is a limitation, because it's not to him, even if I think it is to me. And he spends apparently a lot of time trying to get me to see that. And maybe all of us. He tried very hard with Israel in the wilderness. And I just need to finish up, but in the 11th chapter of Numbers this week, they start complaining about not having meat, and they start remembering fondly the good old days in Egypt, and the leeks, and the garlics, and the flesh pots, and the fish, and all that stuff. And then Moses actually says to the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on me, your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived this people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers. And it's okay to complain to God, by the way, especially if it's a valid complaint. And then he says, where am I to get meat? See, they're grumbling about not having meat. Where am I to get meat to give all this people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry this people because it is too burdensome for me. And then he has them pick out 70 people, and he says, I'll put some of my spirit, some of the spirit that I've put on you, on them. And then he gathers them. And then the spirit falls on them. You know, two of them that were supposed to be there didn't show up. I don't know why they didn't show up. Maybe they had ADHD or there was something else on their schedule, but they were supposed to be there. But it didn't matter, apparently, because in the camp where they were not supposed, they weren't where they were supposed to be, all of a sudden they just start prophesying because the spirit came on them too. And then somebody starts to kind of complain about that. And Moses says, oh, man. Like, you don't know what you're saying. I wish all the people would prophesy. And he got his wish because you can all prophesy. It may have only been 70 then, but Moses was not competitive. He realizes that the person that's making, like, the complaint says, are you jealous for me? I just wish this would happen to everybody. And he got his wish. I mean, the Messiah came. And then Shavuot came on that particular occasion, and the Spirit was poured out. And Moses got his wish. And so, how much of the time are we just not even thinking about what we've been given, what's resonant in us? And then at the same time of all that, I was just thinking, in this circumstance we've been in, regardless of what you think about it, there's a lot of trouble in the world. Even if this whole thing was imaginary, this is still a big problem, right? No matter which way you slice it, it's a big problem. There's a lot of trouble that's come. Damage has been done to things. People have died. And I was thinking, yeah, what would I be like if, I mean, can you imagine having nothing but this to eat every day? You go out of your tent or come out your door and there's a few of these laying on the ground and God left them there and you go gather them up and you just munch on them. How I don't know how long they were before they started complaining about the meat. It seems like it was a bit of time. And, you know, and it didn't sound like it tasted that bad from what the scriptures say. But how long, and I assume, by the way, I assume this is a theological assumption, that manna was a perfectly balanced diet. Elon Musk would have loved it, even though he'd rather just do away with food altogether. It would have been his thing. And it didn't even matter how much you gathered, because if you gathered a lot or a little, you had exactly what you needed. Can you imagine Elon Musk? I mean, he would die for that. And perfectly balanced, because I'm sure that God didn't feed his people something that would leave them deprived of nutrients. But how long would it take each of us to get sick of it? And I've been thinking about this, because I don't like the situation we're in. I don't like anything about it. And so I'm reading about the Israelites, who I always see myself in, the best of them, the worst of them. I see it all. And I always think, how long would it have taken me to start cursing God's food and saying, give me slow-cooked venison with onions and give me something else to drink, and just give me a fridge full of whatever I want to eat whenever I want it, or I'm going to just grumble and complain until you strike me dead. I mean, well, they didn't actually say that. I'm just thinking a little farther ahead than they did. Every day, no matter what, God is sufficient for us. Every day, no matter what, He has what we need. Every day, no matter what, we have a purpose, and it is actually possible to fulfill it in any circumstance that we are ever in. That is either completely true, or this book isn't worth reading. It's one or the other. So I'm really glad that I can actually see you today. And I just want to encourage you to look around, ask the Lord what He's placing in front of you, asking Him who He wants you to love. If you have no idea, just ask Him to send somebody. His love is shed abroad in our hearts, and then it's meant to go out like the light that illumines every man, because that's what's in us, and bring other people into the kingdom. So, you know, you're really powerful. And if you commit the smallest thing to the Lord, He'll do very big, important things with it. And you may not know how big some of them were until the age to come. But it's just what God does with people. And it isn't possible to be of no account. So blessings on you. And Father, I just ask you, encourage us all, build us up today. Help us to build ourselves up in you. Help us to build each other up. And help us, Lord, to share what you've given us, the truth of the gospel, the love of Messiah, and place your blessing upon everyone. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panamelecha v'echunecha Yisa Adonai panav elecha Yasem lecha Shalom.